is the home voiceover studio engineer to the stars in Los Angeles, California. A Virginia Tech grad whose knowledge of the latest recording gear is second to none. He's a voice actor and the home studio master, hailing from Buffalo, New York. His home studio skills and knowledge of voiceover recording is unmatched. When Dan and George talk shop, people listen. And the talk continues tonight. Welcome to East West Audio Body Shop. And now, live from his high-tech facility in Santa Monica and his penthouse studio in Buffalo, here are George Witham and Dan Leonard.
Woo-hoo! All right, stop
screaming. We made it.
Cancel. There we go. All right. We have returned. I actually was able to run the intro. How do you like that?
Nicely done, man.
Why, thank you very much. I am a professional, a highly trained professional. Anyway, good evening, everybody. I'm Dan Leonard in the East.
And I'm George Wood in the West.
Sort of. And together we all are, East-West
Audio Body Shop.
Yeah, that was really sloppy, everybody.
We were not.
You know
you are. Oh, I missed the rehearsal of that.
No, there's no. This is totally live.
We shoot the rehearsal around here.
Yeah, we know this rehearsal. Yeah, we can't do that. Anyway, tonight is our first ever voiceover marketing roundtable, and we have a great set of guests with us, a bunch of people, and some people who aren't even here who are trying to get in. But the really important people are here. We can start off. Joining us from Irvine, California, is the one and only Ann Ganguza.
Yay! Hi, everybody.
Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure to have you on. Now, you're an expert in marketing. That's all you ever do. You live on Facebook
live.
And on Twitter. Yes, you do.
I have an online persona.
Well, that's going to be very interesting. I can't wait to hear your perspective on it. Joining us from Michigan, a couple of folks we've wanted to have on the show for a while. They're like, oh, yeah, we know about your show. We want to be on it. You have no idea who we are, do you? Debbie Gretner, husband Paul Rerick. How you two guys doing tonight?
Hey, we're good.
All right. I can't wait to hear what you guys have to say because you're always writing stuff and we know that you know about marketing. From Miami, Florida, Doug Turkell joins us for the first time ever on eWebs.
I don't know who you people are, but some guy showed up at my door earlier asking if he could use the Wi-Fi. And so we thought we would figure this out. Yeah, that's George over there.
Yes.
A few feet away.
Yes.
That is really trippy.
We know George is here. Well, let's get a look at the long shot here. There he is.
Oh,
there he is. Okay. George, we know, but he's actually in Miami tonight. His odyssey continues. Joining us, I believe, from New Jersey is John Melly. But, John, are you there? Can you hear us? Can you talk? Well, we know what he looks like. That's what's most important. Joining us from Athens, Georgia, the one and only incredibly gorgeous Kelly Buttrick. Good evening.
I'm so excited. I'm so nervous.
Why? You are a broadcast professional. There's no reason to be nervous.
Nobody looks at me when I voice.
Oh, well, we're all looking at you now. Billions of people.
Yay. Do I have anything in my teeth? Yeah.
Yeah, they do look good. Anyway, what we're going to talk about tonight with all of these wonderful folks is voiceover marketing. And I guess I should lead off the conversation with, the fact is we got so many people doing what we do, and there are so many things we have to do to stand out from the crowd and get attention. Why don't we start over with Anne? How has marketing changed with you in the past, say, 10 years as you've been going through the voiceover business?
Oh, good question. Well, I actually wasn't necessarily marketing so much online before, and obviously, in the past 10 years, I mean, the advantages of the internet and online avenues for marketing have really opened up, you know, the field, the playing field for marketing. And whereas, you know, I may have never been to school for marketing or taking a lot of marketing classes, the internet has allowed me to watch other people market and learn from them and learn from others and be able to develop my own marketing plan in order to market my business.
Now, did you have a background in marketing at all?
I did not, actually. A background in technology. And that technology allowed me to learn marketing techniques and that from others online.
That's a good and a good place to learn.
Yep.
Debbie and Paul joining us from Michigan. How did you guys, you know, is your background in marketing at all, or was it strictly in acting and voiceover, or how did it all come together for you?
Well, yeah, my background is as an actor, as a creative type completely. So the technical end of everything is something that when I first started out, somebody else did. And of course, it has evolved in such a way that now, as a voice actor and as an entrepreneur and with my own home studio, I have to be the engineer and I've got to be the marketer and I've got to wear a lot of hats. And what we found out early on was that having a partner that you're married to, so you don't have to pay him a real salary, allows you as the voiceover talent to be able to actually focus on being the talent. And I still do a lot of the audio engineering kind of things, but he is able to handle the marketing end of it, which really is a full-time job with as much as you have to do these days to maintain a presence on the internet and keep in touch with your clients and get new clients and drive people to your website and all of those things that you have to do. I mean, the list is just never ending. You never stop marketing. And oftentimes, if you are just the one person who is the talent and everything else, it just, you exhaust yourself. So I make him do all the heavy lifting.
And what kind of stuff do you do, Paul?
All the heavy lifting and all the stuff she does, all this crap she doesn't want to do is pretty much what I used to do. But that seems to work well. And you know, there was a time when we didn't market very much, talk about 10 years ago, and when we moved from California back here to Michigan, there was that period of time when suddenly a whole bunch of people rushed into voiceover, and we kind of woke up and went, holy crap, we got to market, because we weren't doing a whole lot prior to that. So, you know, it's been a learning curve, and it's...
And things it's change every day, you all know. I mean, it just sort of keeps evolving in a way that you have to stay up with, and it's... not for the faint of heart.
That's for sure. Let's talk to Doug Turkel, one of our good friends, a man who is here every week in the chat room. We've dared him to come on the show, but you talk so much about stuff about marketing, and you've got so many unique things that you do to market, starting with your brand, which is something that everybody knows you by. It worked really, really well for you. Tell us about that.
It came about because in the beginning I was having a real hard time differentiating myself. I don't have a big, deep, rich, impressive, rumbly voice that anyone ever says, wow, you have one of those huge voices, you should do voiceovers. But once I started doing this work, I realized that I didn't have a very descriptive way of describing my sound, because it's sort of a generic everyman sound, for lack of a better term. And so I used to market myself as Doug Turkel, voiceover guy, which told you what I did, but not what I think is more important, what I sounded like or what clients could expect to hear from me. So, it was a pretty long process to come up with announcer, but when I did, it was just like a huge light bulb going off for me, because in one made-up word, which was great because that meant the domain name was available, it kind of describes who I am and what I sound like. So it's also very flexible, and I've been able to wrap a whole lot of marketing approaches around that un theme, and it works really well for me. And I think there's something out there that works equally well for everyone. The trick is finding it.
Yeah. And that's probably the hardest part.
Absolutely.
You know, I mean, and what kind of a process do you go through to find that? But we'll talk a little bit about that in a few minutes. Kelly, what about you? What's your background in marketing, and how did it fit together for you in voiceover?
My degree from right here in Athens, GA, is in journalism public relations. And my pre-VO work was in marketing, fundraising, media, PR. And that's really, you know, when I was thinking about tonight and what I might be able to contribute, the way I market is very, very, very research and relationship focused.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more PR. It's more of the PR public relations type of connecting with my clients on a very, very individual and thoughtful basis. And so I just carry that over as much as I can into voiceover.
Oh, well, if you're a pleasant person, it makes it a lot easier.
It's all an act. I'm really, really mean and nasty.
George, I muted you for a second, but let me get you in on this discussion since, you know, you're because
was
you...
Was I mouth breathing?
Yes, you were. Just a tad.
I tend to mouth breathe.
Yeah. Now, you've got to market yourself, too. But that's a slightly different marketing sort of thing because you're trying to find clients and stuff. And, I mean, now you're worth... And they do some of the marketing for you, but you got to do most of it by yourself, don't you?
Well, I'm marketing to you guys. So, yeah.
Well, then you're succeeding, ladies and gentlemen.
You know, what's challenging for me is if I do my job well, I don't hear from the client again. And that's what's so different from what you guys do. When you do your job well, hopefully you hear back from them again. And your marketing gets easier because you start building up repeat clients. Whereas for me, unless I have a client who has a very complex studio or has very high demands or is just very, you know, just needs a lot of high-touch support, for most people, they get to speak to me once, maybe twice, and that can take care of them for a year or two. So, yeah, it's really hard. I have to constantly find new clients. I think I speak to somebody at least 5 to 10 new people every week work with 5 to 10 people every week. I mean, it creates a lot of other problems too, just from a customer service standpoint, and it's a lot to keep track of. And I had created a monster. At this point, I've worked with probably about 1,000 people, and it was just too much to handle, and that's why I decided to join up with Edge Studio and have a bigger team around me to act as, you know, do marketing for me. In my world, there's no agents that are going to, you know, be an agent to represent me. There's no managers that are going to manage me. So this was the next best thing for me is to have a larger team around me. But yeah, it's a constant process to keep the new clients flowing in.
Absolutely. Well, here's one of the things you can do. You can use your official J.S. Gilbert pocket knife and cut one of the wires, or just fray it just enough. It'll break in 2 months, and they'll be calling you. Oh, look at this. Obviously, the rat's chewing on your wires.
Actually, what I do is I tell people they need to use Pro Tools, and that pretty much keeps the clients coming back.
All right, let's talk a little bit about the types of marketing that there are out there. I mean, there's so many different things that we can do, and you can't do all of them. But let's see, Debbie and Paul, let's talk to you about this for a second. What are some of the specific things you do to try and get people's attention?
Well, we were sort of discussing this earlier to just try to sound intelligent about the subject. And, you know, one of the things that I said, because you're right, there are so many different ways to attack this beast. And for me, what I learned early on was that I sort of go from the approach of if you build it, they will come. So my approach is creating a website that has everything that people want to be able to hear, and then work on the SEO for that website, which, again, is something that you can continue to build on, so that people who are looking for voice talent are going to be able to find you, that you're coming up high in the search engines. Now, SEO is a whole beast in itself. How do you get SEO? And it's still sort of a mystery, I think, for a lot of us. But, you know, after you keyword your site and after you try to keep adding new content, and that's why we started blogging, was to make sure that we had that in there, and we keyword the blogs, and We have a lot of samples on YouTube, and YouTube is connected to Google, and so there's all these little interconnections. It's almost like fitting the pieces of a puzzle together. So my approach, and Paul could have to, he might speak on this a little bit differently, but my approach, because I don't want to cold call people. That's not me. And I think people have to be very conscious of being authentic in who they are, not only as a voice talent, but also in the way that they approach their marketing. Because if it comes off as insincere, or if it feels forced, or if it doesn't feel comfortable for you, it's not worth it. Life's short. You gotta feel good about what you're doing.
Yeah. So I sold life insurance for a while. I broke several phones. They went right through the wall. So I cold calling, not for me.
You what gotta else? Find your calling. But you know, what? I know people that love it, that thrive on it, that get up in the morning and, you know, call production companies and recording studios all over the country, and it's like a game for them. So there are people that is a perfect fit. So I think everybody needs to find what is a good fit for them, what gives them their mojo, what makes them feel alive and like they're accomplishing something. But now Paul was mentioning something about how when
no, I think that's good,
I was just
going to
say in general, for when you're marketing, that especially as a voice talent, it's difficult to keep things reined in enough, because you could certainly spend 8+ hours a day on marketing alone, and then there's no room to actually do the work, right? I mean, isn't that a big conundrum that everybody has?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
So you have to balance that, and for me, that's why I have him. So that, and I think that's a very unique situation. It's my little secret weapon that I have right there. So that the space is open for me to be able to do the work, and I'm not bogged down and overwhelmed with all of the other marketing stuff. And I do enough social media or whatever just for fun, and so that it fills me, and so that I feel like I'm connected to people and that I know people, even though, you know, we rarely get to do this kind of a face-to-face thing. But so that I'm part of the community, but still, you know, you got to cater to your clients too, and there's only so many hours in a day.
Do you do much follow-up with your cold calls? And
who, me?
Yeah. If you do, if you
do,
you don't do any cold calls.
I don't do the cold calls. No. I follow up. And my thing as far as bringing people to me is that when I get an email from someone who's been to my website because they have found me in a search in Google for whatever they're looking for, then I try to give them really fast and speedy response. I try to answer their needs. I try to give them a custom audition. I really sort of overload them with customer service to make sure that they feel very special and that they're my only client, even though, of course, they're one of many. But everybody's got to feel like you're treating them as if they're your top client.
Absolutely. Anne Ganguza. Now, what's some of your marketing mix? I mean, aside from, you know, mm-hmm. a tremendous amount of Twitter.
My Twitter, a lot of it is scheduled for certain tweets that can be scheduled. So I spend time, like, in the beginning of the week on that. But I try to essentially drive the traffic, as Debbie was saying before, like, it starts with a website. And you want to drive your traffic from social media to your website so that people can then, you know, go there and find your contact information, listen to your demos, and do whatever they need to do to hire you. But what I try to do is to engage and interact with clients and tell my story through social media so people get to know me. And of course, it's not a hard sell. That's common sense. But I just so that people get to know me. And it's a process. It's not something that can really be done, you know, in one day or one period of time. It's kind of gradual, you know, in small doses. And that's basically, I try to have people get to know me, my personality, so that they like me and then they want to hire me and, you know, become engaged and get to know, you know, what I can do for them and get to know, like, what my niche is for voiceover so I can best serve you in this way.
All right. Doug, let me ask you this. You know, yeah. about websites, because so far, you know, Deb and Paul and Anne and Kelly have all said it's important to have your website there and driving people to your website. Is it a website? We all have to have one. It's your business card.
Yep.
Is it essential to drive people to your website simply for your demos or for really getting your branding, or is that website one of the most essential things you have to have? Is that what's going to get you the business, or is it something else?
I think the answer to that is my answer to a lot of things, which is a very definitive, it depends. Because depending on the market that you're going after, they might expect to hear from you in different ways. I think a website, first of all, is essential. I think everybody needs one, because no matter how you reach a client with other marketing materials, say, they're very likely to still come to your website. And my feeling is that aside from your branding, which is important, your website should also take every advantage of the possibility that you can build trust with a client before they've ever worked with you. I'm a big believer in what's called social proof. I want them to get to my site and see that other clients I've worked with have really nice things to say about working with me. If you do that enough and with the right people, they're going to know that you're a professional before they ever send you a script or even an email. They'll hear your demos and know that you have, hopefully, the sound that they want. And then if they learn a little bit about you and your website gives you every opportunity to teach them, they'll know that you're an upstanding citizen with real chops and experience and satisfied clients. And beyond that, there isn't a whole lot that you can do to convince a client that you're right for them. You either sound like what they need or you don't. But regardless, if there are two people they're looking at, but one has a website that's very 1996 looking, they might be just as talented or more talented than you are, but if it doesn't look as though they take themselves seriously when that potential client lands on their site, I think they're doing themselves a really big disservice.
Yeah. Kelly Buttrick.
Okay. All right, I'm going to look at my notes because, again, I'm nervous. But I honestly, I feel like Debbie, she and I are very much of the same philosophy, especially on SEO. And I actually have a company, some young guys here in Athens that are doing my SEO, and I'm booking a lot of work from people going to my website, and new websites coming soon, but the SEO is already there. As far as my toolkit, I guess I do things a little bit differently. That yes, it's about what I can give my clients, but the only way you can tell that story is you got to find out about your clients. So I guess go about things a little bit differently in the fact that rather than me telling them about me, I want to know about them. So I get real stalker, and I use that old newspaper reporter skills, and I go online, and I find people that I think will hire me, and I research the snot out of them. I find newspaper articles. I find work samples that they've done. It does take a lot of time and investment, but I look into that, I find out about them, and instead of a cold call, because like you, Debbie, I hate them. They make me cry. If somebody's mean to me, it's awful. So I will cold email, but it's a warm email because I've done my research and I make reference to these things that I've found out about them. And probably not until maybe the third sentence, and they're all short, am I saying what I can do. It's all about them. The other thing I do to make it about them is I'm very into thoughtful appreciation. I think there's a place for branded items when you're doing a marketing campaign. I've done those. They're great. But I also think there's a place for genuine and thoughtful appreciation. And I'm going to use Doug as an example. Just because I think very hard about how I want to say thank you to someone who has done something for me and for my business. Rather than sending something generic, I think, okay, well, Doug Turkel just made a referral, and the guy was really nice. It was a great job. What can I do for Doug? Well, I know Doug loves his family, and he talks about his family all the time. So I packed up a bunch of board games that my family likes and sent them to Doug. Zach
and they
Miller
were thoughtfully appreciated.
Good. I hope they kicked your booty. But
usually.
Zach Miller likes sushi. I sent him a handmade sushi plate when he referred me to a big account. So it's just a it takes a lot of time, but when I look at the amount of time I put into it, it is well worth it to my bottom line.
Let me go across the board here, because a lot of people are talking in the chat room about who does their website. Do all of you have a webmaster? How many of you do your own sites? Anne?
I do my own sites.
Okay.
But I have a technical background, so I...
Well, that helps.
Yeah, it helps.
Deb?
We do some of it, and we've had designers help us also.
Doug?
Both. I have a couple of sites that I've had designed for me. I have a couple of sites that I do on my own. And just before you change the subject, while we're on websites, want to take this opportunity to point out to people who, whether you do your own website or not, I think it's really important that you take links to any pay-to-play sites off of your personal website. A lot of people still seem to think that it does them good to have those links there. What they don't realize is that you've spent all this time, all this effort, all this money to market to potential clients. You've done loads of research, reached out to these people. You've finally gotten them to your personal website where you have total control of the branding and the message that they're getting. And with one click, they can end up on a website where they can find 30,000 other people who do what you do. So I have nothing against pay-to-play sites, but that one particular aspect of it drives me nuts. I'd be happy to change my opinion if somebody can explain to me why it's good for them to have it there, but I think it's a huge mistake for people to include those links on their own sites.
George?
Things are changing now. We're actually, Edge is having a whole new website built right now. It's just a massive, massive undertaking and very expensive. But we have a huge amount of content that we're managing and all that. But my own websites, I've always done myself, and I think it shows. Not necessarily in a good way. But I've always used Squarespace so I could self-manage my sites and update them very, very rapidly if something needs to change. And I did hire somebody to help with some branding and logo design 2 years ago, and that's where the current VO Studio Tech logo came from, and I was really happy with it. You have to decide whether you want to. Are you really good at logo design? You're probably, if you're a good voice actor, you may not be a good logo designer. So if you're going to invest anything, have someone do that part. And then maybe you can dabble in the website design as long as you've got a color scheme and a font and a logo that you need to, that you can build from. Tools like Squarespace, Wix, and what's the other big one that everybody uses that's slipping my mind right now? WordPress.
WordPress.
You can build some pretty good looking sites with good templates. So just make sure it doesn't drain all your time and don't make it overly complex. You know, the most important thing they need to see is who you are, what you sound like, and how to hire you. And you can have all that on one page.
Absolutely. Now, I hire someone to do my sites, and I also, but I got a lot of other sites because we're always, we're marketing our personal studio services and stuff. And it's important, to me to have control of my site, that I can update my demos, that I can change things, that I can, as Debbie was talking about earlier, about having content and, making sure your blog is in there and making sure that, you can update the content and that sort of thing. And that's important to me, that you have control of that website and not necessarily. Now, if there's any webmasters out there who are listening to me here, you guys, what they do is they grab you by the gorgle, and they're the only ones that can change your website for $250.
Oh, yes.
We know that all too well at Edge Studio.
That's why I do it myself.
Really, yeah, mm-hmm. It really messed us up big time when we had a website built in Drupal, which is very challenging to work with, I've found out. And when the web guy left our company, it was a big problem. So make sure it's some sort of content managed site that you can do your own updates on. If your webmaster is saying that you have to pay them for all the updates, run the other direction.
Absolutely. And don't have it in Flash. Anybody have their thing in Flash?
Yeah, because
it's not going to show up on an iPad or an iPhone or something like that. Which
Kelly, I saw you raise your hand.
Yeah.
Oh, I just was going to answer the website question.
Yeah, go ahead.
And that is that I write all my own content because I'm working with web designers that are not familiar with what we do. So, and my website that's being built now is based on the SEO plan that we have. So it's a challenge, even as a former newspaper reporter, to write based on certain content that my SEO guy is telling me. And we go like this all the time because I want it to read well, and he wants me to say something a certain way. So we do this a lot. But
who wins?
I understand. Both. It kind of depends. We both walk away with bruises, and the SEO is working. But the new website that's coming up is very, very, very loaded with lots and lots of content, so much more than I have on mine now. And I get all stressed and freaked out, but I remember reading an article, and maybe it's different now, as my, I guess, SEO guys want me to believe, but I read an article by somebody, I hate that I can't refer who it was, that basically said voice talent need one-page websites, name, demo, contact information, that's it. Mm-hmm. I like to write, so I'm cool with the content, and I'm cool going head-to-head with the former UGA football player, now SEO star, about that. But it's fun, and it's a challenge to do it. So I guess mine is a little bit of both, or will be a little bit of both.
All right, well, I want to change the subject in a minute here, but while I have this chance, and since we can't seem to run any spots tonight, we do need to thank our sponsors, George. Of course, starting with the one and only Harlan Hogan over at VoiceOver Essentials, and our good friend John Florian at VoiceOver Extra. Read it every day. All of you have written articles for VoiceOver Extra, so go read them. Go back into the archives and read all that stuff there. And, of course, your employer, George.
That's right, edgestudio.com. And the technical wing of Edge Studio, which is VO Studio. VOStudioTech.com, that's my part of the world over there. And Edge Studio does demo production and coaching, and also full-blown voiceover production for commercials, e-learning, DVDs, that kind of thing. So it's a great resource, and if you're in the New York area, it's a great place to go and cut auditions and things like that as well, because they have an amazing studio in Midtown Manhattan.
Yes, which we got a really nice look at last week. And you're there occasionally, and people can actually run into you. John Melly, can we hear you? Talk to us. Well, he was here, and then he was gone. He's trying awful hard.
Oh, he's trying so hard.
Yeah. Well,
sorry, John.
John, let's see here. He keeps fading in and fading out. Wait. Are you there? Talk to us. John? All right. Well, that's 4G for you. Let's move on. It's bandwidth. It's all those things. But we'll get him on here eventually. I want to talk about branding for a little bit, and I want to go to Doug, to start off on this one, because we talked briefly about your brand as the announcer, and let's go back to that topic of how do you find your brand? I mean, I've been searching for years, and then I suddenly the mustache was there, and everybody's like, it's the mustache, and I believe it was Maurice Tobias who I was talking to. She goes, what does that have to do with voiceover? I don't know. People seem to say, all of you have sent me stuff. It's like one mustache thing after another. That's a candle, by the way. If you can't put it open. Talk to us. How do you try and find your brand? At least give us a couple of clues as to how one can search for that.
Yeah, and again, it depends. There are just so many possible approaches. Your mustache has literally nothing to do with voiceover, except maybe that it's close to your mouth.
That's true.
But it is memorable. And if you use it effectively, that's all you need. Mm-hmm. Your brand can be niche specific. You could be focused on medical narration. It can be performance specific, more like mine is, or like Karen Clark, the hip chick voice, talks about what your performance sounds like. There are so many different approaches you can take. Personally, what I did and I think this works for a lot of people, is I took a stack of scripts that I had been hired to voice over the previous 6 months or so at the time. Not audition scripts, not scripts I thought I might sound good on, but things people had paid me for, which is a really important distinction. And I compiled all the specs from those scripts into one document and then started looking for the commonality. And in my case, the vast majority of those scripts, when they were describing the voice they wanted, had something to do with everyday guy, real person, natural sound, not an announcer, not pukey radio guy. And after writing down, filtering it down even further to those keywords, we ended up coming up with announcer, and it made perfect sense. I've heard from a few people over the years that that system, that method has worked really well for them. And once you, basically it's telling you what your clients think of you, because they have a sound in mind when they write that script and they write those specs. They end up hiring you, so you know that you fulfill those qualities in most cases, because sometimes, admit it, the spot sounds nothing like the specs, but you know when that happens. And so it's sort of a peek into your client's mind to tell you exactly what they think of you. And that's far more important than what you think of yourself.
That's true. It's not an easy process.
It's not.
You have to really think about it. And I've seen lots of exercises you go through to say, well, what is it? What, you know, is it this? Is it that? Is it this? Mustache candy. People send me mustache candy. Never stops. I must have hit on something, you know, and then I came up with, he has a handle on your message.
Another thing you can do, by the way, and this works pretty effectively too, is ask your clients. If you have clients who are either longtime clients who you get along with really well, maybe you don't get along with them so well, or you don't know them well enough to approach them and ask, but you know that this person is a really good writer, that's a good person to ask. Tell them that you're working on some marketing materials and you'd like to hear from your clients a word, a sentence, a paragraph about what they think of your sound, your service, your performance. And you'll get some really insightful things that you may never have thought of. I did that once, and a lot of my clients wrote what is a fairly nebulous line, Doug gets it. And what they meant was, he understands my script, he's able to take the message that I'm trying to get across and really infuse the script with it. And I turn that into a line that says, Doug understands, so you're understood.
Thanks.
And with a certain segment of my clients, that's been a really effective line. So ask your clients directly. They're almost always really happy to tell you those things. They take pride in sharing a good relationship that they have with you by letting you know what they think of you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And what about your branding?
Well, I have a couple of, I guess, different brands. I mean, obviously there's the VO Peeps brand, and then there's the brand for me, my personal brand. And I think that personal branding really lends itself to our industry, because we are pretty much selling our voices and ourselves. And so I agree with enlisting the help of, you know, your clients or your family or friends to help you brand yourself, because it's very, very difficult to do it yourself. And it's kind of like a journey. I mean, it's in self-discovery as well. You know, I worked for, you know, many years in what I'm good at or what I enjoy doing in voiceover. My niche would be technical, e-learning, you know, that sort of thing. And so I tried to brand myself as, you know, the tech girl or, you know, that sort of thing. And so that was always my conscious decision when I was marketing. You know, so my brand came into my marketing in that way. So everything that I posted was a conscious decision to speak my brand, and also to, as Debbie mentioned before, regarding getting the outside clients interested in you. It was Kelly who was talking about researching the clients. So research the clients that you want maybe to work for or hire you, and then start creating posts and branding posts that would maybe attract them to you, and getting them in your circles, like as in LinkedIn or any other social media area, or in Facebook. And so then you can start creating content that might attract them to you, and so that you have branded yourself as an authority in that particular expertise or that area.
Mm-hmm. Deb?
Something that I wanted to touch on that Anne was talking about there and that we've talked a lot about, which is I find often when I'm reading social media that is posted by voiceover professionals, that often they're targeting other voiceover professionals and not clients to try to get work.
Exactly.
So that we, you know, there's a place for both of them, but if you're looking to actually use social media and that kind of networking to market yourself to get more work, then you have to try to find the ways to speak to the clients that are going to hire you, not to other voiceover wannabes that want to know how to put a demo together or, you know, whatever other things that new people coming into the business are curious about. So we're trying to steer more in that direction. And I think what Kelly says, too, just about researching, trying to find out and being in communication with the people that you are either looking to have hire you or have already hired you in the past to continue to understand, well, what is it that they're really looking for? What do they want? What's important to them? How can I serve them? Mm-hmm. Serve, I think, was another word that you used, Kelly, that we use a lot, too. Put us in touch with people that we can serve and try to make their job easier. That's another kind of MO that we go with. I keep seeing a lot of head nodding, so I feel like, you know, we all have
similar kinds of
preaching to the choir here probably, right?
Well, but we've...
But it's great information.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, it's and it's important that we, you know, we get this out because there's a lot of people who are fairly new in the business who watch the show all the time, and they're like, how do I make myself different? You know, there's so many faces out there, so many voices. Everybody's unique. And I've always said that, you know, it's one of those things about our business that we're all snowflakes. There's plenty of work to go around, and there's always a job for you somewhere. And then it's just a matter of maintaining that client and really showing them that you're a professional. Kelly, what about your branding?
I don't know that I can say anything that people haven't said. And by the way, the more I hear W talk, the more I think that somehow or another we were separated at birth. but I will mention just a thought and an idea or a tip is that there are subtle ways to brand as well or to communicate your brand. For example, sometimes when I will send something out to a client, as far as I know, I am the only full-time working voice talent in Athens, Georgia, and most people affiliate Athens, you know, as being like a really cool artistic town, lots of music here, REM, Widespread Panic, B-52s. So I will oftentimes send clients coffee that's roasted in Athens, Georgia, or I just, well, I'm not going to tell you what it is, I don't want to give away that one just yet, but I will find some music-centric things from Athens. There's also a really cool folk artist here that does, you know, affordable art, neat things to send. And so it's just I'll give you one example. I was hired by a ad agency in Detroit. And, of course, you know, I played up the fact that I am from Michigan. But I just sent them two jars of Fickle's Pickles, which are made in Athens, Georgia, three cans of Jittery Joe's, some peach jelly and some homemade, honeysuckle lip balms. And then I sent them a book about Athens, Georgia music scene because one of the guys said he was a musician. So I didn't send anything that had my name or my logo or anything on it, but it was just a nice subtle way. I think I called it a box of Georgia gratitude from a transplanted Michigander. So you can do it subtly without shoving it in someone's face, too.
And now those clients are thinking about hiring Kelly again just to get the gifts, which is
exactly. They're wondering how good of a friend she is with her UPS guy.
Oh, they love me.
I bet.
That's an important thing. Yeah. Hey,
Dan, let me just... One thing that we sort of glossed over, because I don't think a lot of people think about this when they set out to do their marketing... all of what we're talking about assumes that you are good enough at doing voiceovers to book work.
Right. Yeah.
No matter how good your marketing is, nobody is going to buy what you're selling if it's not a quality product. So the very first steps to effective marketing, I think, are having some ability, some training, and some talent as it relates to voiceover. It's just, that's something that goes unsaid too often, I think.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you can't do it, then, you know, you're going to find out pretty quick that nobody's hiring you. All the marketing in the world is not going to help you.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Mustache tape. People send me mustache tape. I think I've cornered the market in it. Let's we could talk about branding a whole lot more. I think branding in itself is probably a whole, you know, a whole panel discussion in itself. But Doug, you were talking about, you know, as far as branding goes, let's take it into a slightly different angle here, talking about niche, because you mentioned that earlier too, that you've got to find where your business is coming from. I think I was reading in a forum somewhere where I got into an argument with somebody, which almost never happens, where there was the we were talking about niche, and I think I said, you've got to go out there and eventually you'll find your niche. And then somebody wrote in and said, no, your niche finds you. What do you think about that?
Welcome. I think that's purely semantics.
Okay, good. So I was going to argue with him.
Yeah. Either way, it doesn't matter how it happens. It could be a niche that you're particularly passionate about and you have a background. Some people who were nurses come into voiceover, and they'd be great to do medical narration because they can say those difficult terms. They can discuss the procedures with authority. They know what's going on.
They can say ankylosing spondylitis without thinking about it.
Methyl tetrahydrofolate polyalkylcyanoacrylate. It's not a problem.
That's right.
But so if you try to force a niche, it's not going to work. It's something you either have to know a lot about, have a passion for, or just maybe you happen to be particularly good at explainer videos or whatever it is. So whether you find your niche or your niche finds you is totally irrelevant. I think what's more important is that you specify, in some cases, it depends, for your clients what it is that you do and what it is that you do best. When it comes to niche marketing, since that's what we're talking about, I think a lot of people make the mistake of grabbing there are no absolutes. It's not a mistake. A lot of people grab their name as their domain name, thinking that that's the best way to go. And it might be if that's what your marketing focuses on. However, before you're a well-known entity in the voiceover world, which might be never, you can have a great career and not be well-known. I think what's most important is to put yourself in the shoes of your potential client. What are they searching for? My clients are not looking for Doug Turkel because they don't know he exists. In many cases, my existing clients do, and I market to them separately. But in terms of finding new clients, they don't know who to search for. They're searching for a particular sound or a particular type of voiceover. So I need to consider what those search terms are that they're putting into Google and build my brand around that. So maybe you want to own medicalnarrator.com or explainervideovoiceguy.com or whatever it is, so that your keywords and your niche are baked into the domain name, so that when people go looking for what it is that you do, they're more likely to find that site. And yes, that site happens to be you, but they're not going to go looking for Doug Turkel.
All right. Well, we're going to, you know, we'll probably open it up to some questions from the chat room in a little bit, but I wanted to, you know, follow along with a couple of other things that we were talking about here. I can get back into my notes here because someone's typing in there, which they're supposed to be doing. With all the things that we can do, I just very quickly, because I want to talk about having an agent, and a lot of people seem to be marketing to agents, and for some reason, unless you're making a lot of money, no agent's going to talk to you. You've got to be making a substantial income in voiceover for people to, because has anybody just sent a demo to an agent, an exclusive agent, and saying, yes, you're going to make me lots of money? Anybody got any thoughts on that?
Well, I think it depends on what market you're sending agents to. Obviously, there are agents in markets all across the country. So if you're talking Los Angeles, New York, or Chicago, and I think Chicago's kind of a different entity altogether, that's a different story than if you're marketing or looking for an agent in Portland or Dallas or Seattle or Cleveland, Ohio. So I think there – and the smaller agencies in different satellite cities are going to probably getting – be getting more breakdown auditions, so you might get a lot of repeat auditions from having multiple agents, that kind of thing. But I think those kinds of agencies are much easier to get, especially for a new person coming in, than trying to go for one of the Big Ten in Los Angeles. I don't know, are there 10 anymore? Is it 15? I don't even know what it is because I don't do LA so much anymore. So I think it depends on what market you're looking in. And also just agencies, I mean, that's a whole nother topic altogether because it depends on what kind of work you're going for. Obviously, if you want to do big national glamorous commercials, then that's the avenue that you're going to go through. But if you want to just be a working professional voiceover actor and you're not into hearing your name in conjunction with some big a client, and you're fine doing narration and e-learning and IVR and explainer videos and web videos and corporate, et cetera, which can be very lucrative, then you can do that without having an agent at all.
Absolutely. I think most people don't have agents, and most of the work they're finding is from all of these various different things that they're looking at. Well, let's take another quick break here so we can gather our questions from our voluminous studio audience, which is actually quite large tonight, considering we're just on YouTube tonight and not on our usual Ustream thing. But want to remind you that if you need help with your personal studio, George and I are available. You can drop off if you want to have your audio analyzed. Just go over to my website. You can drop it off in the specimen collection cup. It's right there, and I will be happy to listen to your audio and make sure that it's up to snuff, and if not, we'll get it sounding right. So join us for that. George, I'm going to unmute you and let you ask some of the studio audience questions. You're unmuted. Well, you were unmuted. Now you are muted.
All right.
Yeah, here you go.
And apologies to the folks who are not in the Hangout right now that want to be desperately. Kelly can't get back in, and John just can't get enough bandwidth for some reason. He's been trying desperately, and they're both apologizing profusely and frustrated. So, sorry, guys. And we're gonna have them back on a future show, believe
Absolutely.
Me. Absolutely. So, please, thanks for trying to be in here tonight. Anyways, moving forward, we do have a lot of questions from the chat room tonight. It's pretty awesome. Starting at the top of the queue, what I've gathered here, Karen O'Brien asks, how would one create a blog that's not just white noise? Talking about blogs now. Who would like to field that? Blogging is worth the effort?
Well, Debbie was saying that earlier, that she does a lot of blogging and stuff, so why don't you take that one?
How much is too much? That's another follow-up question. Shelly asks, what is the thought on blogging? Is it to blog or not to blog? How much is too much? Debbie, would you follow up on that?
Why don't you answer, Paul?
Or Paul?
Well, everything, let's see. The SEO side of it is what I've focused a lot on starting a couple years ago. And the easiest way to keep expanding your SEO on your website is to do a blog. That's just something I've heard so many times, I finally started believing it. And so we started blogging consistently. I look at search results and, when I see where we're at on the various search engines, I see movement. It makes a lot of sense to me. We try to blog 3 to 4 times a month is really our goal. I'd love to do more if we could, but it's challenging to come up with articles that aren't just white noise, that actually
Kelly's back.
Have some interesting content to them. So, and that your clients want to read, because that's kind of been our focus lately, is trying to find things that our clients actually would be interested in. And maybe answer some questions for them or bring their attention to some aspect of what Debbie does that they need.
So. Well, and I think, too, just getting back to that authenticity, I think oftentimes I'm just inspired with some thing that happened to me in a situation that was involving voiceover. And I think, well, gee, this would make a good blog. So, I mean, it's almost like taking the diary of life as a voiceover professional and trying to pull things from it that you think would be interesting for people to read. And, yes, it is challenging with so many bloggers out there and so many really wonderful writers. And I read a lot of blogs, and I'm usually overwhelmed with how brilliant people are, you know? So it's difficult to feel as though you've got something important to add to the conversation. But I think it's just important sometimes to contribute content. We really started blogging more as an SEO avenue as opposed to just to release my whatever it is that I had to pontificate about. Like I had some great knowledge to give. It's really more about the search engines finding it. And if somebody gets some information from it, then that's great.
Mm-hmm. And what about you?
Well, yeah, I agree with that. If you're thinking in terms of SEO, you want to have content. And the more that you can have fresh content, at least that's the latest trend when you're researching what is it that you need to do in order to increase your SEO. You know, a lot of, you know, the algorithms now or Google's trying to, create a search engine that services content. I mean, content is king. And yeah, there's a lot of content out there, but we all have, I mean, you have to find what it is that you have to offer, and I'm quite sure that every one of us has something valuable to offer. And why not just write that? And when you do, it will kind of organically populate with search terms, and you'll be, you know, hopefully, you know, you can then be considered to be the authority, you know, in a certain particular area, or, you know, you're the expert. And that's kind of what you'd like to be known as, you know, not just for other voiceover people, but again, for those people that want to hire you. You know, if, you know, you want to gear that content towards people who will hire you.
I think Anne makes a really good point, actually, and it
thanks, Doug,
dovetails really well into what we were talking about earlier. If you can be the expert in a specific area of voiceover, you can become the go-to person for that kind of work. You can't be an expert in doing voiceover because your market is not everybody who hires talent. You can't be all things to all people. So if you pick something specific, not only can people regard you as an expert if you do it well, but it also makes it much easier to write cover letters and to write blog content and the content for your website, because then you're not writing to some nebulous market out there. You're writing to some nebulous people out there. You're writing to a specific market, and you know exactly what kind of information will resonate well with those people.
All right. Here's one from Jen Henry. I want to get everybody to go in on this one, but I want to toss this to Kelly first because she is very aggressive in some of her marketing, and she asks, "How much is too much?" Kelly, you there?
Oh no, she's frozen.
Oh no!
Is Jen referring to blogging specifically?
No, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I mean,
how much is too much?
I guess I want to know how much of what is too much.
Right.
Maybe she can fill us in on the chat room there. I'm paying attention, so hopefully I won't miss that.
All right. Well, let's move on to the next one here then.
Yeah. Chris McCullough, how about mobile-friendly sites? So, you know, how important it is to have a site that works well on mobile devices?
Very important.
Extremely.
Yeah. Very, yes. Very important.
Yeah, that's one reason why I like using some of these managed tools like Wix and Squarespace. And is WordPress doing it now?
Oh, yeah. WordPress themes. Absolutely.
Yep.
Responsive. Mm-hmm. Yeah, look for the keyword responsive.
Responsive.
So whoever, whatever system you're going to use, make sure that web system is responsive so that when someone loads your page from a mobile device, they're not having to zoom way in to read things, and they're able to see everything, because sometimes if there's flash content, anybody on an iPhone, the last thing you want to do is alienate people with iPads and iPhones.
Right.
They tend to be the more well-heeled, the people that are doing the hiring, the executives. So keep that in mind. But yeah, it's definitely very important. I'm sure everybody here has a site that can be browsed or used on a mobile device. Scott Chambers, question for Ann or the entire panel, but we'll start with Ann. With social media and online networking being the prominent way of communication, is snail mail and postcard marketing still a valuable tool or a waste of time?
Oh, good question. Well, I actually think that while I concentrate mostly on online, there's something to be said for a handwritten note, a handwritten thank you, a note of appreciation. Because, again, you know, your clients are not necessarily technically savvy all the time. And so where, you know, you may be doing certain marketing that's online, you might be missing a whole audience that is not necessarily online at the same time you're online. And so that's when the handwritten and that, you know, that token of that gift perhaps that you send out to them, it really, really means a lot. Really means a lot, because you've taken the time, because people, you know, are so online these days that to actually write, and I don't, my writing skills have completely gone down the tube, but it seems, because I don't write as much as I used to, but it really is, I think, appreciated, you know.
Yeah, the key really is about building client loyalty and building that relationship with your client. Mm-hmm. So the more ways that you can do that, the better. And I do think that snail mail still has a place, and even a more important place than it used to, because it's not used as much anymore, because everybody's so much into social and doing everything online. So that when you actually do get something in the mail, it's exciting to open it up. So think about, put yourself in the position of your client. And if they're getting, if I got a basket from Kelly,
yeah, Kelly,
you have to refer some business to her to see what she'll send me.
Really? It's worth it.
I would be thrilled. And then, and forever, I will have her on my radar. So, I mean, if you are a voiceover talent and you have a particular person or a client that you really want to maintain and or get on board with, then find your way to make friends with them, to make nice with them. Yeah. And you've got to do it authentically again. You've got to do it in a way that is natural for you. You can't take somebody else's made up idea and you know, put a bow on it and send it off if it isn't something that doesn't feel right for you or that wouldn't authentically come from you. So figure out a way to make it personally yours.
Gifts?
I was going to ask today about gifts. I mean, is it distasteful to gift people thank you gifts that are branded product or branded or marketing tools? I mean, is that kind of distasteful? You know, like, thank you for your business. Here's something promoting my business. Is that the right way to go? I mean, I like the gift basket. I like the Kelly's ideas. You know, is that a better way to go for you guys, or do people still like getting branded things in the mail? Anybody,
Kelly,
have a thought on that?
Kelly, go ahead. Go ahead, Deb.
I was just going to say, I think...
that was a thank you.
I think it depends on what you're doing. If you're doing a blanket mailing to a client list, I think it can be helpful to use something that is branded, something nice that would be helpful. I have a logo that I use, which is more than just lip service, and I sent out little lip tins with a logo and whatever contact information on it, because it's something that someone could keep in their desk and refer to and use on a regular basis. It might even work on your mustache. I don't know. Dan, should have thought of that.
Yeah.
But then, on the other hand... I'm confused because I'm seeing Doug's line go off there. Another thing that we use, which is a non-branded thank you, and it's because we elicit reviews from our clients on a regular basis. And Paul will send out emails after, you know, I've done a job, and after he's invoiced a job, he'll send out a request for a review. And we do have an incentive so that we do a drawing every month for a $50 gift card, a Visa gift card. So they have something to at least spur them on as a little reward to say a few words that's going to help me out. And in return, then I do something that is a nice return for them. I don't do $50 rewards for everybody that writes a review. I do make it kind of a little contest because obviously you've got to mitigate how you're going to be spending your marketing dollars, and you've got to make sure that you're not... Yeah, that too. Or just overspending. But Kelly, did you hear the question? Because this is really up your alley.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Did we lose her again?
Oh, no.
Yeah. Are we overloading the circuit or what?
She's in here somewhere. I think she's on two different places.
Well, so, you know, some people say, until we get Kelly back, because there she is. I'll let her answer.
Okay, go for it.
I have not heard anything. Sorry, you guys. I'm clueless. Flying blind.
Well, we were talking about gifting.
Ooh, and, gifting.
Oh, yes. That's the right question for you. Is it important to gift your clients? Or, you know, I mean, there's always the holiday stuff and things like that. But as a thank you gift for hiring you. Come back.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Well, if we wait for Kelly to come back, I'll answer that quickly. Some people say that, for example, sending branded thank you cards is a no-no. They think that only a generic hand-printed a thank you card is the way to go. I think you could make the argument either way. I can't say that one is right or one is wrong. What I've done sort of as a compromise, that's the front of my card. Again, because of the flexible un, I've attached it that way. That's the only branding on this card, by the way. And then on the inside, I don't know if you can see that, it says never. Lots of space for handwritten thank you. So. I like to think, or the way I've justified that to myself, is it's mostly an unbranded card, but it subtly reminds them of my branding and my logo, so I get away with, it's not promotional,
right.
It's just a reminder, or maybe
it's a letterhead.
That's right.
Or on the back of it, you have your website, you know, right. I would go for that.
Yeah, here's mine. Yeah.
I can hear you guys now.
Yeah, we can hear you, and I think John Melly has joined us as well.
Yay.
Hey, John.
John Melly, welcome.
Hey, John.
Well, as a motorcycle rolls by here, have you been catching any of what we've been talking about?
I have been working furiously to try and get back in here, so I apologize. I really do.
Thanks for your efforts. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
We're taking questions from our chat room because we've got a ton of them, and we don't want to monopolize your time all night, you guys, so we're going to...
Can I say something about gifting?
Please.
Oh, please.
Okay, I don't know if it's already been covered, but this is just a thought. A non-voiceover friend gave me some very good advice when I started, which was do not send holiday gifts because they get lost in the shuffle of everybody else's holiday gifts. And once you start giving a client a holiday gift, you are then expected to continue to give that client a holiday gift.
Yeah.
So, and I just want to get this point across before technology rips me away from you again, since I live in the boonies and internet sucks out here. And that is, there is a difference between promotional and gifting, and there is a place for both, I think, in marketing. But just give it some thought before you gift someone. Just if it's going to be a gift, a true gift, make it a gift. If it's going to be a promotion, make it a promotion. I don't think there's a big gray area.
Yeah, that definitely ties
good
up.
Advice.
That's how I started this question off, actually. It ties that up really well, absolutely. Yeah. Naz asks, how would you go about a branding post, Anne? Could you give an example of that for us?
Do we know what a branding post means?
Yeah, quote-unquote branding post.
It's simply, you know, something, when I say branding post, I mean, you know, if I want to, you know, say something about, you know, hire me because I'm technical, right? Or I could be doing that. I might post something about, I don't know, the CES show that shows how technical I am or something that I enjoyed or something that showed my passion in that. And I would just make, that would be a blanket post maybe, you know, on Twitter or on Facebook or LinkedIn, so that people who are just kind of seeing that in their feed, it just kind of gently, you know, sits in their mind, and they say, oh, she went to CES or something, and then that kind of puts in the idea or the brand that perhaps I'm technical. And then, you know, if I do that enough times over time, then it will become known that Anne is technical, and perhaps she would be a good person to, you know, voice that technical narration. Or that medical narration or that sort of thing. So that's what I mean by a branding post. It's somehow revealing part of my brand within the content. And it's very purposely done. I mean, it's for me, it's well thought out. Of course, I want it to, you know, look like it was just, oh, here I am at CES enjoying, you know, the robotics, you know, demonstration. And in reality, in the back of my head, I'm like, okay, I want to focus on getting this client that I've already researched. Thank you, Kelly. You know, that I've already researched. So I'm going to put this post out here now, and then maybe I'll tweet it later on so that hopefully that client will be attracted. And say, ooh, Anne, who's the girl that we want to, you know, voice that technical narration? Anne Ganguza. So, I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, I think that's great. John, mm-hmm. I wanted to get, now you're finally here with us, I wanted you just to give us like a, do you have like a silver bullet for marketing that really is something that's like your go-to that you just, when you're like, oh, I need to do this because I know this is good. Oh, John.
And he's gone again.
Oh no.
Oh, poor guy. He's really apologetic. He's having so much trouble, but we're going to have him on another show, I promise you guys. More questions in the chat room. Jen Henry has a good one, actually. If you have a website, and this is maybe not a can you or should you maybe kind of question. If you have a website, it's okay, everybody. Can you buy additional domain names for the same site? And I guess I can follow that up with should you have additional domain names for your website. Who might like to field that one?
Doug should tackle that one first.
Okay, I was going to say you should really talk to an SEO person about that. I am far from an SEO person, but I can tell you that to the extent that I understand it, yes, you can buy additional domain names. The way she asked the question doesn't quite make sense. You can't buy additional domain names for an existing site. However, you can buy additional domain names and point them to your existing site. You could also put content on those additional domain names with appropriate keyword-filled writing so that if you've chosen your niche and you're specifically targeting people in that niche, when they get there, they will be reading about things that interest them and that are compelling. Plus, you have links on that site leading back to your main website, which I think, I'm no Google, no SEO expert, I think that gives you additional Google juice under the current Google algorithm, which is changing all the time,
yes.
And I can't even figure it out, let alone keep up with it. But the short answer is yes, you can get additional domain names and point them to your existing site. What you do at those additional domain names is up to you.
Yeah. I'm working with a friend, and we're working on a website, and we're trying to get voiceactor.com. And it seems somebody owns voiceactor.com but is not using it and won't answer the phone. So we've been like, please tell us, because we want to use it for something really important, like a really good website.
Or then they might sell it to you for $8,000.
They may, but then
yeah,
again,
there's people who do that for a living.
Yeah.
That flip domain names, yeah. Like houses.
I dabbled in multiple domain names for a while for my services. I had vorecording.com, recordingonthego.com. I mean, I registered a ton of them. But then I realized when it came time to rebrand and come up with a new name for the company and everything, that was just too difficult because now you had all these fragmented ideas for branding, and it's very hard to get energy around all these different names. You know, maybe having multiple domain names that are related to the domain name. So you have like the full spelled out version, the abbreviated version, maybe if there's maybe have a version with a the at the beginning, or if it's plural, get the singular version if you can. My wife created a website, narratorhelper.com, and I'm encouraging her to get narrationhelper.com because I myself, who helped her come up with the name, by the way, have told multiple people to go see narrationhelper.com.
Oh, no.
So I'm even giving out the wrong domain. So it's like clear in that case, you should probably have both so that if somebody mistypes or just hears it wrong or I say it wrong, they're still going to end up in the right place.
So she should either get both domain names or a smarter husband?
Yeah, that might be a good idea too.
Okay.
Or a husband that's had more rest.
You know, something Kelly? Like that. Kelly, go ahead.
I just wanted to throw out there a piece of advice that somebody gave me, which was if you have a common name, you may also want to purchase that domain name as well. Mm-hmm. So if your name is like John Smith, if somebody's going to Google your name, you want to make sure that you come up. There's some high school track star named Kelly Buttrick, and I think my SEO is just like smackdown. And a dentist. There's a dentist named Kelly Buttrick, too. Smackdown.
Can I make a point here, too, or even ask a question?
Go for it.
Which is, we were talking before about a website and how really you could put everything on one page. I have more than one page on my website, and the people that we were working with in website design and SEO were saying, well, you can optimize each page so that instead of having all kinds of different domain names, you can actually optimize each page separately so that that all comes up. You can obviously optimize every YouTube video that you have out there. You can optimize your blog posts. You can... Is that correct?
Yeah, that's the whole point. I mean, not all the pages carry the same weight. Your home page is has the most power, but certainly you want to have as many pages as you can. The more pages you have, the more opportunities you have to put SEO out there and attract more people looking for what you have.
Yep.
If I could just say regarding SEO, one point that I didn't realize until I actually implemented it in my website, there is power to advertising yourself as a regional or local talent. For example, I put the words Orange County, California in my webpage, and when people are searching for a voice, sometimes they don't realize that you have a home studio and that you can basically voice from anywhere. So that type of client that would be searching in Google for a voice for their phone system or for, you know, a medical narration doesn't necessarily know that they could hire somebody in, you know, Alaska to do it. So they might put Orange County voice. And so I've actually gotten quite a bit of work by just implementing a couple of, you know, local words, and also by, you know, creating a free profile on Yelp, that always helps too, so that I'm known as a voiceover artist in Orange County. So that localization in your SEO is important and can help you.
Now, here's one that I think is pretty important, because this is when we were all started off in voiceover, this was the one that everybody said, you got to do. You know, you've got to do postcards. And Scott Chamber asks for Ann and the entire panel, with social media and online networking being the prominent way of communication, is snail mail and postcard marketing still a valuable tool or a waste of time? Since no one's doing it, yeah, I guess it would be kind of unique.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Any thoughts?
Oh, I agree that there is a place for snail mail and handwritten postcards. I mean, again, because nobody does them, they're fun. I like to get handwritten things in the mail. It's not as prevalent as it used to be. I don't think you need to, you know, do a monthly marketing campaign necessarily with postcards. But I think that as a thank you, or, you know, maybe less frequently, you know, you could send something out. I love the idea that Kelly said about the gifts not done at holidays. I actually send out New Year's cards, you know, so that my mind, and it's handwritten, and so that it doesn't get lost in the holiday mail. That's my thoughts.
Yeah. Something else. Actually, I got a thought on that one too, because I actually send my clients sometimes a fruit basket or something like that. My biggest clients, the people who pay the rent. And I got a call from somebody in March saying, did you send me a fruit basket? Well, it got delivered, and I was not in my house for 2 months.
Oh, no.
And when I got home, it was just a tad moldy. But she really appreciated it. But anyway.
Yeah. Something else to consider, by the way.
Go ahead, Doug.
I was just going to say, the thing about marketing is really about touching your clients in a variety of different ways, in at different times. And the consistency is really what's important there. So I think there's no real wrong way to do it. And I don't think anybody that's going to get a postcard in the mail is going to think, oh, well, I'm never going to hire that person because they sent me a postcard. Do you know what I mean? So I think you just have to find ways that are creative for you, that somehow put a different spin or a personal spin on whatever it is, and just use variety. And we're creative people. That's why we're in this business, right? So use those creative juices to sort of feed into your marketing in so many different ways, and how you post how you write your blogs, how whatever you send out, whatever research you're doing on your client, and fun things that you're going to send them, or different times of the year that you're going to send things. The list really goes on and on. And so I would just say there's no wrong thing to do. Although I know that we had even said in the outset, are there some do's and don'ts? I mean, are there things that people think, oh, this is just really taboo, never, ever, ever do this?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, well, let's start to wrap things up here. It's getting a little late here in the East, and some of us are in the East and some of us in the West.
Doug was trying desperately to squeeze in one last comment on that. Do you still want to get that in,
no,
Doug?
No real desperation. I was just going to say something else to consider when it comes to postcards or something, some lumpy mail. Be aware of what's going on in your market. If no one else is sending postcards, by all means, send postcards. Be the one who touches that client in a way that no one else is. It helps to be unique, to be different, to be compelling. You want to find interesting ways. If every single voice talent is emailing a particular production studio, they're going to get really used to just clicking delete or moving them over into whatever folder they'll look at later or however they deal with them. If they don't get postcards very often, you're the only one who's got something sitting on their desk that day. I'd rather be in that group than in one of 17 people who send an email that day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. All right, let's go around the horn here once. And everybody, give us a one final point on what you think is the most important thing in marketing. And then, as is the tradition here on East West Audio Body Shop, to shamelessly promote whatever it is you want to promote, you can throw us out a link of your choice for people to read a little bit further on some of your stuff. Let's start with Ann.
Let's see, the golden piece of advice, be authentic, be yourself, and you can find out more about me at angangusa.com and vopeeps.com.
Make sure you go over there. Deb and Paul.
Consistency. Be consistent. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. So if you're in it for the long haul, be authentic in who you are, use that in your brand, and make this a relational business. That's what it is. The people that you get to work with on a daily basis, whether it's through email or through a phone patch or an ISDN, they're your friends after years of working with them. So that's what you're maintaining, is that relationship business. And if you ever want to look at my stuff, you can find me at DebbieGrattonProductions.com or DebbieGratton.com. Paul?
That's it. You got it.
Oh, okay.
All right. Never mind. Kelly?
One thing, I don't know if it got covered because I was kind of in and out, but the one thing I tell everyone is make sure everybody you know knows what you do in a non-cheesy Velveeta way. So what we do is very unique. And I don't just mean people in our industry. I'm very much, I think it was Debbie that was addressing that. Like, most of my Facebook posts are not designed for other voice talent. They're designed for the clients that are on my page. But make sure the guy who does your lawn knows what you do. Make sure that your parents know what you do. that your brother and sister, that your neighbors, that when you're in the pickup line, and not that you run around going, hey, I'm a voice talent. But people will normally say, so what do you do? And you say, oh, I'm a voice talent, and you don't use an elevator speech. You just use a couple bullets. Oh, you know, radio and television commercials, corporate narration, that kind of thing. So what do you do? Turn the conversation back around again. They will remember you because what you do is unique. And I can't tell you how I have booked a job through my dad's fishing buddy. I booked a job from an old college friend that I ran into at a wedding. These are two pretty big jobs just from mentioning what I do, or people who were on my personal Facebook page that saw that I was posting about work. You guys think that, you know, it's not a personal Facebook page, because every single person on there can get you work. They may be sitting around a dinner table and somebody says, hey, I'm doing this video thing, but I hate the way I sound. Wouldn't it be great if your next door neighbor goes, hey, my neighbor does something like that. She hides in the basement, never comes out, does kind of voice stuff. So just make sure everybody you know knows what you do, without being really annoying and cheesy about it. And you can go to my website, but it's kind of old right now, which is kbvoiceovers.com. Hopefully in the next month or so, the new one's coming on that was designed by Sarah of Imaginary Jane and put together by Prolific and content by me. Mm-hmm. Oh, and find me on Facebook. That seems to be the most current content for what I do.
Yeah, I see you there a whole lot. John Melly, even though you've been gone all this time, can we hear you? John. Well, Doug, you get the last word.
I would say do everything you can to create your own opportunities because nobody cares as much about your career as you do.
Unless it's your husband.
My husband doesn't care very much. My wife, on the other hand, I would say be so good at what you do and how you market yourself that they can't ignore you. And doing the marketing and branding and doing it effectively is not easy. I understand that. If you need some motivation to get that done, just remember that you cannot work for the people you want to work for any less than you already do. And you can find me at unnouncer.com and at voiceovertalent.com.
All right. Guys, this was fabulous. This went just as well as we could have hoped with a few
minor details. Except for John.
Except for John.
And Kelly sometimes.
And sometimes. But this is East West Audio Body Shop. It's, you know, every week it's Apollo 13. That's right. Anyway, but Aunt Debbie, Paul, Doug, Kelly, George, thanks, everybody, for being with us tonight and sharing all your wisdom. And we're going to do this again sometime.
Yeah, thank you. This was fun.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Even if I had to put up with this guy over here.
Yeah, well.
I just want to hug everybody. This was so much fun.
Oh, I know. Group hug, everybody.
Thank you.
All righty. Well, we have a couple of announcements that we ought to cover this week, shouldn't we? Let's see. First off, we have to thank our donors, Eric Aragoni. I think Sandy McKee sent us some, and a couple of other people. And make sure all you have to do is go to the link right above George's head if you're on our website page, and you can donate to the show to keep it going. Commercial free, at least the big national commercials, only the stuff that we want to tell you about.
Right.
Rest in peace, Casey Kasem. Yes, American Top 40. Yeah, let's listen. And now it's a shame to see someone like that go, but boy, how many of us, you know, were really influenced by his style and you know, and of course nobody really talks like that anymore.
And the voice of Shaggy.
That's right. Oh, boy. Mm-hmm. He was definitely one of a kind. Our condolences to his family. Here are some of the Trevor Jones gave us a donation, as did the one and only Jack DeGoldia in Las Vegas.
Thanks,
he's
guys.
Paying us. He's doing
Not
work for
right.
us.
Do you realize that this guy puts how many time hours a week he puts in? He's donating to us.
That's right. He's putting together.
What's going on?
I know. He's putting together our EWABS essentials, and they're here. We have our own YouTube channel for that. So they're short little bits of voiceover wisdom from all of our guests that we've had on over 147 episodes.
Ooh, wow!
If you can believe that, we're gonna hit 150 pretty soon here. But they're, you know, they're short things, 3, 5, 6 minutes that you get a good point out of, and you don't have to spend an entire hour and a half. Not that this wasn't a fabulous hour and a half having everybody on here. Also, clickers. If you want a clicker, just click right below us there. There's the thing. You can buy those on PayPal, and we'll be happy to send you an EWABS clicker. They come in green and red and purple and some other colors. So make sure you buy those.
Future shows, blank.
We don't know who's going to be on next. Which is
blank. It's just a blank line in there.
I know, because I'm going to be in Puerto Rico all week, so it's up to our producer to find somebody for this week. Maybe I'll find somebody in Puerto Rico. That would be
as long as Kathy's up to it.
Yes, so we don't know who's going to be on next week, but stay tuned. We will let you know who will
be
our guest.
We'll certainly be letting you know. That's
next
sure.
week. Like, if you want to be a guest, write to us at ewabshop@gmail.com. That will probably help. You can thank the sponsors, George.
I will. Thanks again for Harlan Hogan for promoting us or keeping us alive from the day one. You can find out about Harlan Hogan's products over at voiceoveressentials.com. All sorts of custom VO products and just important bits and pieces and not so important little things for the home VO studio. VoiceOverExtra.com, which we've talked about earlier in the show, great resource. If you don't know about them, then you're probably not a working voice actor. And Edge Studio, my employers, and VOStudioTech.com, a great resource for all voice actors with home studios. And like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter at EWABS_show, and subscribe to the YouTube channel so you never miss another show. And if you like audio only, we are also on iTunes, thanks to Lee Pinney, who helps that keeps that going for us every week.
You can
a
listen
lot
to
of you listen only
in the car. Yes.
Yeah, I think even more of you listen than watch the show. So very cool way to enjoy the show while you drive and fly.
And this one was very listenable, which is really great. You sound like you've been up since 4:30.
Yeah, I'm starting to run out of steam a little bit. And tomorrow I have to drive from Miami Shores to West Palm Beach and back. It's a long drive.
Yeah. I've done it 100 times, no problem.
In a Mustang convertible. Don't feel sorry.
In a Mustang
for
convertible. Yes. I rented a convertible.
Yeah, all right. Well, we have to thank a couple of people here. Of course, our producer, Kathy Curtin, who is here in Buffalo taking care of her ailing mother, and so our best wishes to her. Anthony Gettig, who couldn't join us tonight for some of his help. Jeff DeGaulia for doing all the work on the EWABS Essential. Jason Lawson, who we'd love to hear from, where he helps us with this, and Lee Penny for production assistance. But most especially this week, our wives, especially Amy, who's been doing without you for 10 days now.
This is the longest trip from home I've had yet, and this is probably the longest I'll ever do because it's tough on the family and my wife especially.
Yeah, well, and our great thanks to him. Also, Tim McKean is helping us out with.